There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday. Glad you're along. Dr. Bill calls for warmer temps over the weekend and some rain in the mix. More from his forecast coming up at around 1:35. Plus, the second half of this hour, it looks like Senator Doug Jones is going to join us. A lot to talk about with him. And also, a lot to talk about with this man. I hadn't talked to him in over a week, and I'm having withdrawal syndrome here on this. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Going good. Last week you were in Washington.
That's right. It was a busy week up there. They're busy again this week. But yeah, I spent an entire week in Washington, met with each of our Alabama members, the senators and the House members. It's interesting that you're about to interview Senator Jones. I sat down with him on Wednesday, I suppose. And we had a nice little meeting, and I'll have to tune in for the rest of your show to see how you do.
Yeah, you'll have to get
what he tells you.
Well, you'll have to get the answer, right? You said you asked him about then the forthcoming William Barr confirmation vote, which just went down, and you asked him how he was going to vote.
That's right. Well, we talked about a lot of stuff, but one of the things I found interesting, I said, well, you are sitting here, and you're the replacement for Jeff Sessions, and now the Jeff Sessions' replacement for Attorney General is coming before you. You know, how are you going to vote? And interestingly, he his very next meeting was with Bill Barr. He had a few other follow-up questions, so he wasn't quite ready to say yes. He wasn't quite ready to say, yeah, I'm going to vote for him. He said he had a few outstanding issues that he wanted to clear up. But I think it was like 24 hours later, he put out a statement saying, yes, that he was going to support Barr. But I found that kind of interesting. He's like, well, we'll see, because about 5 minutes after you leave, I'm meeting with him. So, but yeah, he's going to support. I mean, I guess he. I don't know if they voted yet. But,
yeah, they did. They did vote. I didn't. I don't have the breakdown of votes. It's a 54 to confirm, but I don't know how.
You know, to me, Barr is a pretty easy choice. I mean, he's been Attorney General before. Yeah, there were some issues the Democrats tried to raise about Mueller and everything, but I mean, this is the biggest kind of slam dunk for Trump that he needed. And what you really needed in that Attorney General slot is a no-drama guy. You know, they've got enough drama. They've had enough drama from the start of the administration till now. You need somebody who's going to, you know, tamp down the drama a little bit. I think Barr's the guy.
And, okay, and then did you ask him how he felt about the spending bill? Although I don't know if the spending bill looked, it might not even have been taken shape at that point, the changes.
It had not. In fact, when I sat down with Senator Shelby, he was in the midst of negotiating it. And so now they have a spending bill. They're going to vote on it today. I don't see any reason why he would vote against it. It's you're only going to see the real extremes on each side. The really liberal senators and representatives who don't want any wall money. And then the really conservative folks saying, hey, this is not enough. We wanted the 5.7. Really, only the extremes will vote against it. Most people, most senators and representatives, Republican and Democrat, will probably vote for it. I would expect him to support it, but that'd be a great question.
What about the simplistic question? Is it a win or a loss? Right? I mean, I don't think that takes in all the nuance. But if you had to say, what's the up or down question? Is it a win or a loss for the president with his supporters? What do you think? What's your take on it?
Well, with the supporters, yeah, certainly a win, probably. I mean, look, Sean Hannity doesn't like it. Ann Coulter probably doesn't like it. And those are the ones that kind of started the dust up in the first place. So maybe there are some on the hardcore Trump supporters that really wanted the wall, that maybe are disappointed that it's not quite everything he wanted. At the same time, are they going to abandon the president? No, they're going to be loyal. I think it's a win, however, only in the context that it's a win right now. If you go back to December, they actually offered $1.6 billion
for
the wall. And so he ended up with only $1.4 billion. Now that's only $200 million, give or take, you know, just chump change. But so he lost $200 million that could have gone toward border fencing. We had a 35-day government shutdown where the economy struggled. It was not good for anybody. And, you know, so we got less money. So if you look at it in the broad context, it really wasn't a win. But the president gets to say that he stared down Nancy Pelosi and some of these folks and actually got money. But you know, and I know who it's a really, really a win for, and that was Richard Shelby. Senator Richard Shelby negotiated the impossible. I really did not expect him to get a cent of wall money out of the Democrats, and they got, you know, $1.4 billion. So, you know, he deserves a lot of credit. You saw the president praising him on Twitter, saying, you know, hardworking Senator Shelby, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is, and it's interesting. I mean, as we've talked about, I mean, Senator Shelby is probably the most powerful man in Washington that doesn't have the name recognition that's kitchen table all over the country. Here at home, of course, he is. But head of appropriations, I mean, you talk about being a big chief. That's big chief territory.
It is. And, you know, when I sat down with him, we had about a 30-minute interview. And what I observed is he's living the dream, man. Like, he's finally got the job he's always wanted. We talked about how he started on appropriations way back in 1986, back when Robert Byrd was the chairman of appropriations. And, you know, all that time, more than 20 years later, he's finally the chairman of appropriations. It's at an incredibly important time. He, you know, over the last year kind of put Humpty Dumpty back together in terms of actually passing appropriations bills. And here was the last thing, you know, they got the process restarted, the government was starting to function again, and this, the border thing blew up. And he talked about that by, you know, it was kind of disappointing because he had done everything else to fix the appropriations process, but this was the last piece. So I think when this bill passes, the president signs it into law, he can finally, you know, check that off of his list of a pretty major accomplishment.
If y'all are just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And if you would like this kind of insight and reporting in your inbox each morning, Todd has a way for you to do it. And it's so simple, even I can do it.
That's right. Alabama Daily News, it's aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. You can click at the top there. There's a button that says subscribe. You just enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Every morning I send out an email, the daily news, that is a rundown of all the day's stories, top political stories from here in Alabama or in Washington, D.C., with an Alabama twist. We talked about these things today, about the appropriations bills, about Senator Shelby. Also, as we lead up to the session and the legislative session in Montgomery, it's kind of a mix of those two worlds. So, yeah, please sign up. It's free. No cost at all, and I'd be happy to have you on the list.
All right, Ted, we're coming back. We will talk about some of the things coming up in Montgomery. In addition, we'll talk about Secretary of State John Merrill up in Washington testifying in front of the House Homeland Security Committee. What was that all about? Well, Todd will tell us when we get back right here on Midday Mobile.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here and good to talk to my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. That blended the worlds of Washington and Montgomery. And I will argue this, that starting next month, although I never know, Washington is such a font of stories, but I in my opinion, Todd, Montgomery moves to the top of the stack starting next month.
Oh, that's right. Look, the start of the legislative session, it's really important. And, you know, yeah, you're right. All the stuff that goes on in Washington, it's very dramatic. It's on cable news, and it's the White House, and it's Congress. But honest to God, if your life is going to be more affected by the decisions and votes in Montgomery. And so it really does matter. And of course, these are our friends and neighbors. You know, these are our state representatives and senators who live among us. They're way more accountable and accessible on a local level. So yeah, it's a big deal. Starts March the 5th. And right now you're starting to see all the details start emerging. You know, the governor released her prison plan this week. We're still waiting on the gas tax, numbers to come out, how much they're going to look for. Lots of different bills being filed. So, yeah, it's getting going.
Okay, you mentioned the governor's gas tax move, and I think this is one of these great teachable moments. I'll roll out kind of what my take on this is, and then you can correct or reinforce. That basically this is a reaction to the fact that even before session starts, they know there's probably not a good chance of getting something done in the legislative branch to get something set up to deal with overcrowded prisons, right? That the legislature won't be able to deal with it, so almost in a... not exactly the same, but in a kind of a move like emergency action for President Trump on the wall, that the executive branch and Governor Ivey is going to go find somebody to build it for us. And is that just a statement that the legislature is not going to do it?
That's right. And that's a great example about the executive action, the President Trump may take or at least had threatened to be taking. You're talking about between $800 million and $1 billion cost. That is insane cost-wise for a state like Alabama. We just don't have that kind of money. Now they want to pay for it using savings and things like that. That actually does make sense. It makes sense to pay for it, no raise in taxes or anything like that. But the legislature has already demonstrated once, really twice if you count both years, that they don't want any piece of this. They don't want to vote to float a bond issue, basically borrow $1 billion to pay for this. They don't want to do that. So, and yet we have to do something. I mean, the state's prisons are crumbling. We're all going to end up in a federal takeover. It's a really bad situation. So what's interesting to me, Sean, is you've got lawmakers on one side that say, well, we want to vote. We want to do it, and we don't believe the governor should have this much authority, and kind of the naysayers. Then you've got folks saying, hey, be quiet. Just let her do whatever she wants to do. We don't want this. We don't want to have to vote on this and go back home and tell the voters, yeah, we borrowed $1 billion after raising the gas tax.
Yeah, because that's going to be, it's all about the revenue. I've suggested, and I'll continue to suggest because I know it'll never be done, but we move forward with a prison lottery in the state of Alabama, but that's just...
There you go. That's right. It makes so much sense.
You know, let's do the Alabama prison lottery. We'll have, how about license plates helping prisons? Where we can raise money through specialty license plates?
That's right. Well, I'm actually, after sitting through that meeting with the governor and the commissioner of prisons, I'm satisfied that, yes, they have a plan to pay for it. But somebody's got to build it. You don't pay, if you're going to build a house, you're still paying rent. You don't stop paying rent. So somebody's actually got to construct the thing. That either means borrowing money or having somebody else build it and we lease it. Either way, it's very expensive.
That's for sure. I want to talk quickly about, because I want to get back to what you expect in session, but yesterday, Secretary of State John Merrill was testifying in front of the House Homeland Security Committee. Why? What was going on?
That's right. Well, this brand new Congress, the Democrats have taken over, and the Homeland Security Committee, one of their top focuses, probably top focus, is election security. They're talking about what the Russians did and all the different ways that people are concerned about the elections being hacked. That the more and more computers are being used, it's a real issue. I actually spoke with Representative Mike Rogers about it. He's the ranking member, and he agrees. Now, he doesn't want it to be used for political purposes about Russia and the collusion and all that kind of stuff. But he acknowledged, we really do have an issue as far as securing the campaign, and we don't want it to be anybody, Russia, China, or anybody else. John Merrill, our Secretary of State, was up there testifying because he thinks the bill that Democrats have proposed, this really sweeping bill that makes voter registration automatic, it prohibits voter roll purging or the cleaning up the voter rolls, things like that, he says it goes way too far. He says, look, we're a state of in Alabama that has a great track record pretty much on voting. We use paper ballots. We use a double authentication system. Basically, it's simple, but it's secure. And so he testified saying, we don't need this. We don't need this federal overreach, this into our elections, because we're doing things right. Y'all take a look at what we're doing in Alabama. It was really interesting testimony. You can go online and see the whole thing right there in the Capitol and the Homeland Security Committee.
All right, and I want to talk about something to look forward to that's going to be out very soon at aldailynews.com. And that's a discussion of, yes, the third rail of the 2019 session, the infrastructure gas tax question, and maybe some wrinkles on this, not only the question of will we and how many cents on the gallon will it be, but who gets what money? I mean, that's a big part of this discussion.
That's right. And, you know, at Alabama Daily News, we've been doing campaign or profiles on all the different new members of the legislature. And in doing these, some of our reporters have found out that asking questions that, man, there are differences of opinion as far as regionally when it comes to the gas tax. And a story we're working on, it may be out tomorrow, is there are many coastal lawmakers in Baldwin County and Mobile County who say, look, we're fine supporting gas tax for infrastructure and things like that, but remember the oil spill, remember the BP settlement, remember how the coast didn't get what it think it needed, in terms of parity. Well, we want that back. And you've got several lawmakers who say, we're not going to support an increased gas tax unless Mobile County and Baldwin County are taken care of and really basically have a greater share than the rest of the state for infrastructure, which is a fascinating story. It may really upend the debate. Who knows? But
I mean, is it enough to derail? I mean, because I would say that we couldn't protect ourselves from having the BP money taken in the first place. So maybe we don't have, maybe we can have our voice heard, but maybe we don't have enough traction to derail this.
Well, everything's a negotiation. It's just like the border wall stuff. You go out there and say, well, we want this much. And they say, we want this much. And you meet somewhere in the middle. So that's probably what it's going to be. There are many little factors to this. There's the city versus counties. You know, there's interstates versus, you know, smaller city roads, things like that. And now there's the coast versus maybe North Alabama. Both, everybody has needs. So when they get into the negotiating table, they're going to, you know, fight it out and do what they need to do. But probably you're talking about some kind of compromise that gets reached, because at the end of the day, everybody does want some road money. Everybody's needing to pave those roads, needing to build those bridges, needing to expand, and the port also is a big part of this.
Now, do you feel that something is done, and is it 12 cents? What do you think? Is it 12, you know, with the six, and then the next year two and two?
You know, on the, some people are saying as much as 23, and then others are saying as little as six. So yeah, I think 12, I think 9 to 12, somewhere in that range is what they're going to ask for. You know, maybe do you ask for, you start big, ask for more, and then, you know, negotiate down. I don't know. But yeah, I think from the, in the 12 cent range, that's probably what we're looking at.
All right. Remind folks once again, they want to get the news from Alabama, Washington, and points in between delivered to their inbox. How do they do it?
That's right. It's just aldailynews.com. Click subscribe right there on the homepage. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Email comes out for me every morning, and it's no cost, no charge at all. But I appreciate you being on the list, and let me know, give me feedback. Let me know what you think.
As always, man, I appreciate your time, Todd. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, joining us right here on Midday Mobile. Coming right back, it looks like we'll work it out, and we'll have Senator Doug Jones on with us. A couple things from, you think they figured out where my wheelhouse was, talking CWD legislation and the Modern Fish Act. Ripped from our headlines around here. Senator will talk about that. They're in between votes in Washington, has a little time to talk with us, and he joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. I mentioned before we went to the Bottom of the hour news break. We're joined by Senator Doug Jones, and lots to talk about with the senator. And thanks for being on the show. I know y'all are busy right now with votes in Washington, so thanks for carving out a few minutes for us.
Hey, not a problem. Glad to be here.
Hey, a couple of things. It's like y'all figured out, hey, this is in Sullivan's wheelhouse. We could talk about it with him. And outdoors in Alabama, something I'm very interested in. And you last week were talking about CWD, chronic wasting disease, on the floor of the Senate. Tell us why.
Well, it's a growing threat, I believe. We're not exactly sure what it is, but chronic wasting disease, obviously, for all the deer hunters out there, they know exactly what it is. It's a neurological disease that affects the deer population and literally causes them to waste away, and can be transmitted for any period of time from one deer to another. It's not seen anything in humans yet, but the jury's still out on that. But it can significantly affect the deer population in any state, and we haven't seen it in Alabama. We're fortunate so far; it's in 26 states, but we have seen it in southwestern Tennessee, yeah, and northeastern Mississippi. So it's getting close, and this bill will just kind of let us study it a little bit more and try to figure out what it is and try to nip this in the bud.
Yeah, you know, talking to the biologists here, wildlife biologists, they say the way this thing spreads most quickly, and probably the major spreads of this, have not been through natural movement of animals. It's been through either bones and spinal tissue of animals, or the animals themselves, you know, as some say, in the back of a pickup truck going 70 miles an hour. That's how it gets transferred.
Yeah, I think that there is some truth to that, but we don't know. I think that's the whole point. Everything that we see right now shows that it's transferred in ways that are not natural movements. But look, it's in 26 states, so we know it's getting transferred. We've seen it in Tennessee and Mississippi, and once it gets here, then it doesn't have to be transferred far, and it can be going. It can go from deer to deer, and then spread. And that's the problem. There's just not a lot of science on it. So the bill that I did with Senator Barrasso, who's a Republican from Wyoming, Senator Bennett, a Democrat from Colorado, would just, you know, let the scientists study it a little bit more, get some money, let's figure it out. It's a huge, huge economic boost to Alabama's economy.
Yeah, and you get it. You hunt, and you get why it's important to us here at home. But if you're making a case in Washington, you probably have to make a case on what the financial impact of it is. And I know for right here at home in Alabama, the loss of that would be not only for our psyches, but for our economy, it'd be huge. It'd be bad.
Yeah, well, no, it's a great point. But you know, I think nationally, the hunting industry is like $40 billion. In Alabama alone, it's like $2 billion. I mean, it's a very important part of our economy. But you've mentioned something that's just as important. I mean, it is important to our psyche. It is a way of life for so many people in our state and so many other states. You know, I'm assuming based on this conversation, you're a deer hunter.
Oh, yeah.
I am. I was out there the last day of season. I was able to get out there. And it's so important that we do. And that's why we just got to stop it in its tracks.
Okay, and I want to talk about, as we talk about money and wildlife, and I applaud you on what you're doing for CWD. Now on to what our fisheries mean. And this one, even though fishing is a big deal all over our state, I'm talking about the Gulf Coast, though. When you talk fishing and you talk about what it means to our economy, you're talking about Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Yep, absolutely. But this is a big deal for Mobile and Baldwin counties, and it's a big deal for recreational fishermen that come in to Mobile and Baldwin counties.
And We welcome y'all.
Absolutely. Whether you live in Alabama or outside, people come into Alabama to fish. So we've got to keep up what we can for all the tourism and all the folks there that are living down there on the Gulf Coast.
So this Modernizing Recreational Fisheries Management Act, we've heard it called the Modern Fish Act. Can you tell us what it does? I mean, put it in terms I can understand.
Sure. It's going to allow for a better collection of data. You know, our red snapper in general, I mean, it's just kind of a random. Every year we get, limits here, limits there. It also is going to give them an opportunity to collect better data, to see where the fish are, how the population is growing in the Gulf. It looks at a lot of different things and also tries to equalize and recognizes that recreational fishermen do not catch the same kind of limits that the commercial fishermen do. And it eases that a little bit to make sure that the recreational fishermen are treated fairly.
And if you look at the dollar, kind of got, if you ever get by the office here, I have a whole folder, Manila folder, for studies from a decade and a half from Texas A&M, LSU, different schools studying the actual dollar amount value. And the highest return on investment for reef fishery is recreational anglers. It is, it's, Senator, it's 4-1 on other, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is. It's a major thing for the country. I mean, you know, look, we had senators from Oklahoma, Hawaii that were all part of this to try to make this bill better. And you know, this thing actually got introduced before I got into the Senate, but I learned a lot in the last couple of weeks of the Senate session here, because this bill was just kind of dead. It was just not going anywhere. And I had heard from so many people that I just took it upon myself to really work my colleagues, because there were questions about it with some colleagues, and then got over and made sure it passed. And it got part of the unanimous consent to pass. And I'm really proud that it's something that I could get over the finish line.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you picked it up, because so many times I would talk with Congressman Bradley Byrne, and he would talk about things that had gone to the Senate. And I said, hey, what happened? You passed this, you worked in the House, and this went up. And he said, it's sitting in the Senate, Sean. It's sitting in the Senate. So,
well, it was sitting in the Senate, again, you got to work both sides. You can't just stop. And I appreciate the fact that it passed the House and Congressman Byrne was on there. But it takes more than just simply doing it in one side. You know, when I, this past year, this in December, I was on the phone to members of the House of Representatives on a couple of other bills that I got passed, the Cold Case Records Collection Act, a bill for rural farmers. You got to work both sides. And that's what I did. And I think if it might have been worked a little bit more, it might could have happened. But it took me getting not only work in the Senate on that bill, but it also takes working on both sides. It takes working on both houses. You can't just throw up your hands and say, well, I've done my job, now y'all do yours.
Well, I guess my frustration when it wasn't getting the attention in the Senate is to where I'm sitting, and I'm sure you're going to be able to educate me otherwise, because it's Washington. But that is, maybe bipartisan is not the right word, but it is. There's got to be Democrats and Republicans that have constituencies that this is a big deal to. Correct?
No, there's no question. And we did. It was a bipartisan bill. Senator Wicker from Mississippi was on it. Former Senator Bill Nelson was on it. Again, Inhofe from Oklahoma is a Republican. Schatz from Hawaii is a Democrat. It was a very bipartisan bill. Sometimes you just get caught up in the rush to try to get things out of here, and it takes a special push. That's what I did. I just thought it was so important that I really just ended up taking the bull by the horns to make sure that I went to talk to all the colleagues. There were some senators that had certain questions that we cleared up for them in the bill to make sure that it didn't affect their states and different parts of the country. And it's those little things that can just, have a bill held up a little bit in the House or the Senate, and you just got to work it. You got to continue to work it. Not everything has smooth sailing, and there's a log jam at the end of every Congress. There's a huge log jam, and it takes somebody to just actually work it. And I did more, I think, than even the prime sponsors, which was Senator Wicker and Senator Nelson.
If just joining us, talking to Senator Doug Jones about this, we talked CWD bill, and we're also talking about the Modern Fishing Act. With this, because I think you said something important that worries me. You said, trying to get something done and make sure it's working for, you got a sponsor in Hawaii, and you got a sponsor in Alabama. You got somebody in Oklahoma, you got somebody in Florida. You have different kinds of fisheries, and that's one of the things that I've always worried about, because I think sometimes from a federal level looking down, you want to apply, and I like rule of law, and I like apply laws equally, but not all fishery. I mean, fisheries are a different thing. I mean, what is the case in the Pacific Northwest is not the case on the Northern Gulf Coast.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think you just had to point that out and to make sure there was language in the bill to recognize that, and that's what we did at the end of the day, is to make sure that folks knew that this act was going to, almost, I won't say exclusively, but primarily, to the Gulf of Mexico. You just got to do that, because you pass a bill, and there's always, I say always, there's a lot of unintended consequences sometimes, and you don't want that to happen to another state that nobody intended for the regulation to apply to them. And so we had to work through that in the last 2 months before the end of the Congress.
Now, the more we can hand over to state control. You know, I know we're using exempted fishing permits now and doing that, but I mean, I think the people most concerned, I mean, you just laid out the case monetarily and to the recreational value of living here, we're going to be the most fiercely protective of this of anybody.
Yeah, that's true. There's no question about it. And but you know what? I think folks recognize that. And despite the fact that this was federal legislation, people recognize that, and they want to support. You know, look, I had Florida senators, I had Georgia senators on it, I had the Mississippi senators, the Louisiana senators. You know, when you get a broad section like that, people understand that this is important to not just a state, but to a region.
Senator, before we finish up, I know you got to run here in a second, but I was actually talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News earlier this hour, and he said when he was in Washington, he got to sit down and talk with you, and he'd asked you about the William Barr confirmation, and you said right. You're getting ready to get on a phone call with him to ask him yep. a few more questions. What did you end up deciding on that confirmation?
I voted for the Barr nomination. I was one of three Democrats to do that. You know, look, I'm a, as you know, I'm a former Department of Justice. I'm an alumni of the of DOJ, right. both as an assistant U.S. attorney and as U.S. attorney, and I got a special affinity for the department. And I felt like that, I felt like Bill Barr is a stabilizing force that we really need right now. There's been some turmoil in the Department of Justice. You know, our friend Jeff Sessions had a kind of rocky tenure, and they need some stability, and I think he brings that. He persuaded me. I think he feels very strongly about allowing any special counsel to go forward, but at the same time, you know, making sure the public is aware to the extent that the law allows it of any report that comes out. So I felt very comfortable voting for him, although most of my colleagues didn't, at least on the Democratic side.
Right.
But I felt very comfortable voting for him.
All right. And speaking of votes here, do you have any idea when, well, I guess first question is, have you gotten to read through the 1,200 pages of the spending bill? And when will that, when are you hearing that comes to you for a vote?
I think it's going to come in the next hour, to be honest with you. We have been going through the bill. We've been going through the summaries that have been provided to us from staff, because we've had staff not only in my office, but both in Democratic and Republican staff, Senator Shelby in particular, have been working around the clock to make sure people understood exactly what was in that appropriations process. And there's some really good things for the country and for the state, and I feel very good about it. And I'm really proud of the way Senator Shelby and Senator Leahy got this job done. I've said this, Sean, for a long time. If we could just let them do their work, they would get things done for us.
So you are you feel good about what's in it? You feel good about voting yes?
Oh yeah, I plan on everything I've seen.
Everything you like
yeah.
in there, okay?
Yeah,
even the spending.
You know, look, there's border security. As I think Senator Shelby said, it's a down payment. There'll probably be some more that we'll talk about and look at this year. And remember, this is not just for Homeland Security. We're
sure.
funding Department of Commerce and Justice, and there are things in there that I think add to so many things that are going to be very good. So I just feel really good about where we are. We should have just been able to do this in December. To be honest with you, I think if in December we could have kept the government open for a little bit and did this then, we would have never had a government shutdown.
And it's 50, I don't know, the mileage has changed, but it's 50 or 55 miles of pick your day, wall, fence,
right.
what barrier, whatever it's going to be. And you're good with that part of it.
Well, I'm good with that, because let me tell you what happened. When you got that conference and when people got together, you know, they brought people in. I said starting in December, we need to see a plan and we need to hear from experts. I don't need to hear the politicians tell me what we need to do to secure the border. I need the professionals. And so the administration came over, brought their experts in, talked to the conference committee, and this is what they came up with for at least this appropriation bill. We'll see what happens down the road. So if it was appropriate and it's something that they could agree on, I'm good with it.
All right. Senator, thank you for your time. We'll get you back on the show hopefully very soon.
Okay, Sean. Thanks for you.
All right. Senator Doug Jones joining us right here on Midday Mobile. They are going back to vote. I guess a little light comes on, the bell comes on, and then they got to go vote. So. We'll take there from the senator. We'll take your calls when we get back and wrapping it up here on Midday Mobile. Paul Feinbaum on the way at 2. Our phone number, text line, 343-0106.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 154 FM Talk 106.5. You know, podcast of the 40-some-odd hours a week of live local programming we do around these parts. Waiting for you over at FMTalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab, or even better yet, sign up to subscribe to get them delivered right there to the smartphone in your pocket, in your pocketbook, laying somewhere under the passenger seat in your truck, wherever it is. Get it delivered to iTunes for Apple users. Stitcher is what I use on my Android phone, but also Spotify and TuneIn Radio, which another little side note here, TuneIn Radio, that's the app you use to listen to us on your smartphone. That is the streaming. Anywhere you go, got a signal on your smartphone, you get FM Talk 106.5 when you download the free version. Now, we get calls about this all the time. Of course they're going to try to sell you the pay-for version. I encourage that. Good for them. It's the profit incentive. That's why you unlock the door every day. But if you're on the sly, you just get the free version. Don't upgrade to the next one unless you want to, which would be fine. I want those people to make money too. But get the free version. Shouldn't cost you anything. And it's a heck of an app. I've been using it for 7 years now, something like that, without fail. Tune in Radio. And there you get our podcast and, of course, a live stream of the station that does that thing. If your phone rings, it pauses the audio and all that. It's pretty cool. All right, I'll grab a phone call or two here before we get wrapped up for the day. And I didn't tell y'all earlier, happy Valentine's Day. Somebody's emailing me, you didn't say anything this show about that. Okay, happy Valentine's Day. All right, now back to it. Brandon in Fairhope. Hey, man.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Man, you tell me.
I don't know who's on the radio today with you. I didn't get a chance to do my homework, but I was just curious. I just saw where they're going to be, the tax thing is going to be back with the bridge, $3 to $6 one way.
The toll, yeah.
So they're going to get us kind of in a double whammy with the gas tax possibly going up.
Ooh.
Because we already know it probably is going to go up because all the mayors of the big cities went to Tuscaloosa for their meeting and everything.
Mm-hmm. You saw that too, yeah. The big five. Yeah, the big five went.
Is that true? They're going to, I'm not talking about the gas tax, but anyway, so they're going to actually possibly do the toll both ways. Is that for locals, or how's that going to work?
I have not been told that. I got in the discussion with somebody over the weekend who said, how do you toll a currently existing interstate? That's, you know, you can't do that. And I said, I don't think you can. I think what their argument would be that whatever the bridge is going to be like the, you know, the I-10-02 or whatever, right? So they're going to say, heck, you can go through the tunnel. You don't have to go over the bridge. If you want to go over the bridge, you pay the toll. Now, I've been told that there would be, you know, here's the problem, Brandon. As soon as I tell you one way, I've been told 10 different ways over the last 8 years. One of them was locals, you know, there was no toll, and then there was a toll, and then there was no toll, and then I heard, we can't build it without the toll. You got the private concessionaire coming in to, you know, to build this thing out, so they're going to be charging a toll, but the toll will be, you know, local folks might have one rate, and kind of like a, I don't know, Florida has the Sun Pass thing, and the other folks will have to throw their money in the turnstile, or it'll be more expensive. So, I mean, to tell you, all I know is I hear consensus on there's a toll. Is it 50 cents? Is it $3? Is it $6? Do you and I pay it as much as, you know, my cousin Dwayne from Texas? I don't know.
That's just crazy. We're taxed in every aspect of our lives, and they're just going to pile on to the pile.
Well, where else are they going to get the money, man?
They can figure out something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Washington can print it. Here at the state level, they actually have to balance it out. Man, I appreciate the call. Thank you. And believe me, we're going to be talking gas tax, infrastructure, lottery, Medicaid expansion, prisons, all that going forward. I mean, that's what we do around here. We watch Montgomery as much as we want watch Washington. And starting on Fat Tuesday, can you believe that? Every couple of years when it cycles around that way, legislative session starts on Mardi Gras Day. So when we all recover Ash Wednesday, I'll be telling you what they did the previous day. Paul Feinbaum on the way. I'll see y'all mañana for Mobile Mornings. Have a good one.